to order, and then I think we're going to turn it over to Mr. Johnson for start us off.
Thank you, Chairman.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to our overview of the 25-year CIP. I'll open it up with the county's portion, and then I will hand it off to the operator to deal with the school portion. So we'll look at the, just want to set the groundwork a little bit for our side. Year one, we always look at the next fiscal year recommendations and budgets that are adopted. Then we look at it in terms of 5 years, we try and balance CIP and the approved budget over the next 5 years. We also look at a 10-year debt horizon. Then we have a 25-year plan that's approved overall. Some of the funding considerations that we look at are the life cycles of the facilities and major operating systems and equipment. We also look at the consumer price index increase over the term of each of our projects. And we have a projected growth rate on each one of our projects at 2%. So some of the county financial considerations, as you can see here, for FY22-31, CIP requests will require $152.4 million in debt funding to complete all of our projects in the 10-year time
frame. She's going to pick it up.
We speak. Be allowed to borrow within our debt capacity. We have the ability to fund certain projects with cash. We also have a future bond referendum. Facilities management, first category. Our major project here is a $3 million project for the Gordon Courthouse complex in FY27. So that's what that's showing there at pink. Judicial administration. And for a new circuit court building, for FY23, we have $1 million set aside in there for our planning efforts. And then $27,500,000, that will be for the construction of our new circuit court building. For fire and rescue, we have some major projects there. Our main one is West Street, FY26. We also have a public safety training center sitting out in FY31, and the District 2 Sandy Hook Station sitting out in FY29 with $9 million. Parks and Recreation. No major projects anticipated for Parks and Recreation for FY22 through FY31. We have approximately $1.54 million that we have set aside in various park projects. Information systems, and we have. From FY22 to FY31, we have about 2.3, 3.5, 7.5 in dollars. We have some recurring PC refreshing we need to do. We need to refresh some of our servers. We have to replace some of our equipment. We have a phone system that needs to be revitalized. We have some upgrades that we need to do with our Microsoft system. We have a next generation 911 system project that we have, and then a couple of GIS and cloud server projects anticipated for that $2.3 million. zeros. Got about $5.2 million outlay in FY22. We have to replace the vehicles that we have going on for $425,000 in FY23. We have approximately $850,000 for vehicle replacement, as well as VHF radio system upgrades. We actually have built in all of those vehicle upgrades all the way through FY31. Education. We have several projects programmed in. Health is just the main one for education. Dr. Raley will go to those more specifically. We have FY22. Projects in pink are those projects that are over $3 million. The first one in FY22 is the new Newton Elementary and Early Childhood Center at $37 million. Then we have additional $4.3 million for Newton Middle School upgrades. For FY24, we have another almost $19 million for Newton High School additions. In FY25, we have another $3.8 million set aside for the third elementary school. Then moving forward for third elementary school at FY29 and $32.2 million. And then an additional $4 million in FY30, which would be for Randolph elementary school and facility. For a total of $118,871,402 for fiscal years 21 through FY31. So for revenues, we have operating funds about $800,000 to fund replacement cycles. We also can utilize for our sources of revenues profits when they become available. We don't get a lot of profit dollars, but we can get some. And those are all set by Virginia Code. Debt, we'll cover those in the next couple of slides. Grants, we always utilize grants when they become available. For instance, we're utilizing going after some grants for the Randolph Elementary School for some generators. Reserves, operating surpluses, we also utilize that. Then we have contingent savings like operating surpluses, utilize operating surpluses, but only then proceed if those savings exist. So it looks like for FY22 through FY31, we have about the revenues we projected about $211,740,000 approximately. For debt service, it would be good for us to go over our debt policies and what we take into consideration there. So we have net debt as a percentage of taxable assessed value. We have a policy not to exceed 2.5%, and that does not include the PECO rate service system. The debt service expenditures, also as a percentage of general fund expenditures, shouldn't exceed 12% with a target of 10%. Again, that does not include the PECO rate service system. The debt service, all debt service scenarios are keeping with our policies. Every $10 million of debt that we take on results in about $600,000 per year in debt service. And that's assuming a 20-year debt issuance with a 2% interest rate. Requests include 152,000 possible debt-funded projects,
debt service is not affordable for those. Any question we have is how much debt is affordable and in keeping with our policies. And other questions that we run through on each and every project. Debt service, as you can see there, again, FY 22 to FY 31, looking at $152.4 million for the projects. Elementary school, which was most of the upgrades, $40 million in the courthouse, $27.5 million in the high school addition, $18.9 million West Creek Fire Station at $7.5 million Courthouse complex renovation at about $3 million Got land for the Burn Elementary School at $3.8 million New Burn Elementary School at $32.2 million A new Sandy Hook Fire Station currently at $9 million Land for Randolph Elementary School at $4.7 million And then a new public safety training center we have programmed in at around $5 million Looking forward, one scenario we've kind of laid out a little bit is looking at our debt service, looking at issuing potentially $70 million in FY 23, potentially in July, and that would fund the Houston Elementary School and the courthouse project. Then we also would issue approximately $26 million in FY 28. That would fund Houston High School and the West Creek Fire Station project. It would require us to add an additional $500,000 of debt service reserve in FY 21 and FY 22 beyond the planned increases that we had by the bank. And increasing debt service 4% each year. The earliest new debt that we could bring forward, if we did that, would be about 2040, unless we got some of the Echo Hope Creek Service District revenue sharing funds, those become available possibly as early as 2023. Then we increase debt service at a faster rate. That scenario would result in all the other projects requested for the 10 years will be pushed out beyond 10 years, including Burr Elementary School land construction, the courthouse complex renovation, we could potentially still fund that with cash. Sandy Hook Fire Station will be pushed out, the Randolph Elementary School land purchase, and the public safety center would all have to be pushed out. And with that, do you have any questions? No questions, I'll hand it over to Dr. Ridley to go through his question. Good afternoon, and first of all, I want to thank county staff for taking the time to set this space up today. I did not anticipate it would look like this. It took a lot of time, I'm sure, to make this happen, so thank you. On behalf of the school board, we appreciate the opportunity just to share and have a conversation today about our school division's request for your consideration regarding our capital improvement needs for the next 10 years. I've been in this setting for the last 5 years, working hand-in-hand with county administrators and you as supervisors to have conversations about overall county needs and recognizing that the needs that you have as referenced on the screen is pretty vast. You have a multitude of areas that you have to address from fire and rescue to parks to IT support and schools and everything in between. And we certainly understand that we are just a part of the overall conversation and the needs that you have. And thank you for having the opportunity to share what the board has requested for your consideration today. So board members, I have sent you a copy of this presentation in your email, so if you want to review it afterwards, you have access to it. So I apologize for not bringing bring you hard copies. Some of the numbers may just be a little hard to see, but I'll do my best to walk through them today. So this is a snapshot of our 10-year plan, and I know you can't see that, but as Mr. Young referenced, the vast majority of our projects rest on two major initiatives. And the first initiative is the new Goochland Elementary School, which is requested at this point in time in FY22. And then the other major initiative is the modernization of our high school facility during the years of FY24, 23, 24, and 25. There's a portion of those funds that are dedicated towards the design in FY23. So they are the two major projects that are under consideration. There are some other minor projects that are involved in this request, but they're the ones that probably deserve the most attention as we go forward. So one of the things that is important as we think ahead is where we currently are with the capacity of our buildings. And as you know, in 2017, our school division went through a process of looking at a long-term facility master plan. We had independent third parties come in and look at the true capacity of our buildings. And that is referenced for you in the left-hand column on this document, which you see here on the screen. And so from there, you can see the capacities of our facilities, and then you can also see the actual enrollment as of December. So this is real data for us. And then you can see that we continue to be over capacity at two of our three elementary schools, both Randolph and Goochland Elementary School, over capacity. We're at 91% capacity at FER based on this information. Overall, if you look at all of our elementary schools, if you add up all of our capacity, and then look at that in comparison to the student enrollment, you can see that our elementary schools across the division are over capacity. And then division-wide, if you go to the high school and the middle school, we're at 94.3% capacity at the division. So we've talked about capacity in the past, and just wanted to update this figure for you for this afternoon. So the priority, based on the conversation had by the school board, is the new Goochland Elementary School. And it's one that we've been discussing in this setting for quite some time. And this is just an aerial of what is proposed based on this early schematics related to what this overview may look like in the future. And as you know, we've already gone through the conditional use permit process and have had that approved, and we're grateful for your support in doing that. But the new Goochland Elementary School is proposed to go at the corner of Steeplechase and Bulldog Way. And then this also shows the needed traffic improvements associated with turn lanes, both heading on to 522 and heading on to Route 6, as well as turn lanes heading into our secondary complex, and increased capacity for the parking lot in front of the secondary complex. And so those projects are listed on the school board's request under FY22 in the amount of $37 million and $4.3 million. But we've had conversations about the timing of these projects and when would you do the road improvements and when would you do the school construction. And so that's why they have been listed in that same time, right? Because they're hand in glove together, the projects that would go together in the process. So as we were preparing for today's presentation, we wanted to share where we are right now with the successes of our elementary school program. And Ms. Lascalette and I were just chatting a little bit about the positive vibes that we have amongst our families right now in the school division. And what we're doing right now in Goochland County is much different than what is happening in many other school divisions across this commonwealth, as we know. And our elementary teachers have had students in their classrooms in preschool since October the 5th, and in other elementary classrooms since October the 19th. And right now, we have 66% of our elementary families who are choosing to send their students to school in person. What happened for the start of the second semester in January is we had 33 more families that said, you know what, I want my students in person. So what we're seeing is that we have our families who want their students in person. And I bring that forward because some may be wondering about what the future of brick-and-mortar schools are in the future. Do you really need brick-and-mortar schools in order to meet the educational needs of students? And since we are talking about an elementary school, our forecast says, yes, there is still going to be a need for brick-and-mortar elementary schools in the future, simply as a result of the developmental needs of students. The best place for them to read and write and learn math is with a trained professional inside the classroom setting, where we can meet their social, emotional needs, their academic needs, and be with them day in and day out in person. We were having a conversation about a high school. We might be looking at a different conversation related to capacity right now. But in the near future, in the next 25, I dare say 30 or 40 years, there's one TAD for brick and mortar elementary schools. And so we have seen that from our community. There's been a demand for wanting students in school at the elementary school level. And I just wanted to share that as a bit of context today. So just to ground us a little bit in what we value as a school division, we're driven by inspiring these youngsters to make a positive impact in their world. That's our vision. And then our ultimate mission is that we maximize the potential of each and every one of our learners. So I wanted to share a few pictures of classrooms, not this year, but last year. Because you go to classrooms now, you're not going to see desks as close together, as we know. But as we talk about the new Goochland Elementary School, I think a key word comes to mind, to light, and that's adequacy. And recognizing that our schools, they've served their purpose for many, many years. They are good schools, they've been a part of our community since 1956, 1957, but ultimately they were built for a different era of time. They were built for an industrial model. They were built for classrooms that were, at the time, different than the vision of what we have for education in our community. So ultimately, as we think about new construction in our community, we don't want being good and having good facilities to get in the way of having great facilities for our community, great facilities that are going to allow us to ultimately meet the long-term needs of our community. So we all have been in different places in business where the workplace is changing. No more are you in an office by yourself, but you're collaborating in conference spaces and go into a Capital One or a Google. I mean, the work environment looks different today than it ever has in the past, and certainly during COVID it's even more different. But I wanted to show a few snapshots of what new construction is looking like in certain settings around the Commonwealth, and recognizing how something like this could help us facilitate even more engaging opportunities for kids, to facilitate collaboration and spill outside of the classroom and have flexible spaces for learning. So this is just a sample of what you see in new construction across the Commonwealth. We had the opportunity to visit this school, which had a lot of indoor air quality initiatives and outdoor learning spaces for kids. And we tend to think that as school construction changes post-COVID, you're going to see more outdoor classroom spaces. You're going to see roll-up doors that allow you to access inside and outside. And certainly, indoor air quality is going to be a big key associated with future school construction. So that being said, we started to look at our pricing model for Goochland Elementary School and recognized that even without COVID, inflation was going to hit. There was going to be an increase in construction costs associated with building a new school. And so we factored the current cost of construction in K-12 education based on the Virginia Department of Education. And then we also coupled that with some inflation factors based on some conversations that we've had with individuals in the market. And so the punchline is that based on our conversation with construction professionals, inflation is going to hopefully be in a place where the cost of construction is going to be less now than it is in the future. Money is cheaper now than it has been and may be for some time. But that is the part of our consideration, one of the reasons why the school board has made the request sooner rather than later for the consideration of school construction. Did increase the square footage estimates associated with the Goochland Elementary School, because as we experience, if we are ever in a situation again where we have a health crisis, and it could be a traditional flu, it could be any time where we just need to separate students, that the actual space within the facility may need to be bigger. The actual classroom post-COVID has the potential to be bigger than the classroom now and pre-COVID. So this does increase the square footage request associated with the Goochland Elementary School, but when you offset that with the cost of inflation and the cost of money, it's a negligible increase in the overall cost of the project. And then we updated our pricing model, and I know that's really hard to see, but we did update our pricing model based on the model that we had used in the past and factored in inflation as well, and so that's built into the request for consideration. The second project is, I want to clump it into the secondary complex. You can see here on the screen what is included in that, and it's interior renovations for our fine arts program, increasing some space for our fine arts program, as well as our CTE and STEM program, renovating one of our classrooms into a STEM design center, as well as some additional space for athletics. And so we go back to 2017, of course, this was part of our long-term facility master's plan, and was designed, of course, in collaboration with our community. And this is the highlights of some of that work. This is just a direct reflection of what they are recommending. I do want to highlight for a second the true needs that we have within our fine arts program, specifically our middle school thing. If I could really drill down into that one. That's a major need, and this is just an example of how decisions have been made that we can learn from in the future. But initially, there were two spaces at Goodson Middle School that were designed for band and drama. But what they did is said, oh my, we also need this other space for fine arts. And they took two spaces and made it to three. So as you can imagine, each one of those programs is compromised in the amount of space that they really need. So you go into that space and you can see that that's a significant concern of ours. So I'll look at it for them for a second. But this is an example pre-COVID of what our ceramics lab looks like. And you go in there, it's a popular course, and kids were really in their commitment training in that space. And so we would utilize some funds to be able to expand that space and meet the needs of those students to a greater degree. Believe it or not, they just have one sink in that space, so a design flaw, something that we would want to be able to repair and make better. And this is not a great picture of what's happening in that band room, but it's, you go in there, there are about 40 students in that space with all their instruments and bags and belongings, and it can be quite crowded in that space. We showed this before, I believe, but this is our vision for what Classroom 143 at Goodson High School would look like. We have a vision for this to be a STEM design center where students can do the entire process of design from concept to engineering on CAD, and then building through a design center where they're using 3D graphics and 3D printers to be able to make things happen with the classroom space at the top. So that's currently a two-story facility right now where we're just using one of the floors. So that would be our vision for that space. And it looks like this jumped around a little bit, but we ultimately updated our pricing for that project. And you can see where it was slightly over $1 million, but as the project has been kicked down the road, the price just with inflation has increased the cost a little bit. Also want to spend some time advocating for our athletic program. And this is a picture of what wrestling was last year. And yes, we are still wrestling. I'm proud of our folks for making that opportunity available to our kids. But they're practicing wrestling in our cafeteria. And that certainly was not a great option pre-COVID, and it's not an option now, and even post-COVID. So part of the request for the secondary complex is to give these student athletes an opportunity for them to practice in a wrestling room. And we are only one of three school divisions in our region, which is Region 3, Grade 3B, based on the Virginia High School League regions, that do not have an all-team region. So what that does is puts us in a constrained place when it comes to practice opportunities. It really hinders us a little bit in the timing of practices and some of those kind of things. So just a stat that we're having for consideration. And then the last aspect of that overall project is the addition of 30,000 square feet on the side of Goodson High School where we could install classrooms for our CTE center, our STEM classes, and have some other design opportunities. One of the things that we experienced, as you know, on Fridays, we had to delay our dismissal. And so what we experienced through that was communication that went well, but was challenged just a little bit by having our CTE learners in a satellite center and having our preschool learners in a satellite center. So ultimately, by building a new GES and by bringing our CTE programs under one roof, that helps us from a safety and security standpoint. We have all of our administrators there. We can communicate to those students, have them all under one roof. So ultimately, that's another side effect of potentially coming these projects. So it's hard to see, but we updated pricing on all those projects as well. It looks like this has jumped around a little bit, but we wanted to just highlight how these projects have evolved just in pricing as a result of changes in costs and inflation over time. But ultimately, this is a picture of one of our preschool students knowing that he's going to be working in our schools for the next 12 years, and this is what drives us, this is why we do what we do, and he's going to be leading our community doing something in the future, so we all really want to do what we can for him, 2,600 other kids, so we can give them the best opportunity to be successful. But hopefully that provides a little bit of understanding what the school board has requested for your consideration, and ultimately we're here to answer any questions that you all may have. Thank you, Mr. Young.
This is Karen, and I would just like to say that the slide on the 10-year CIP school board approved does include a lot of work and study. So there were surveys with the community and all the stakeholders. There were studies that looked at the age of all of our facilities. What would it cost to bring them up to date? What would it cost to keep them safe and make sure that technology could be used at its highest potential for our students and learning? And this is really needs-based, and we appreciate the Board of Supervisors looking at that with all of that in mind. There are a lot of needs in this community, and you prioritize education and public safety. So we appreciate that, and we appreciate everything that you can do to help us move forward with the initiatives that are presented in our CIP.
Okay. Well, let's just keep the discussion on the board for a few minutes. Board supervisor members, any questions? If not, there are any. You might have to slide to the second slide, just so we can look at that.
Thank you very much. So we're looking at all parts of the county, not just the school, but needs of the capital improvement projects. And what I'd like to know, and maybe we don't have it all together today, is to stay within our debt policies and our ability to borrow money, our debt capacity. How much can we afford as a county right now for this plan?
I could ask the department to correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe we're looking at about $100 million in debt is what we can fund, and we can fund about $10 million to $11 million in cash.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Would you mind handing the mic down?
Yes, that's correct. We ran a couple of scenarios, and I think the limiting factor is debt service. You know, how much can we afford to? We are well within our policy, the network policy, and the other policy being the debt service policy. But then once you know what you're within your policy, how much can you afford to pay each year to pay that? Based on a couple scenarios, and Mr. Peterson gave us some ideas today. We're still looking at some things, but we think that within a 10-year time frame, we could afford to issue about $100 million in debt.
Barbara, I was going to just ask Barbara, so, and I know you all covered this in the presentation, but we have, what on this list in the 10-year CIP, that was Mr. Young's presentation, pushed out of the 10-year window?
For the schools, primarily, it would push out Bird Elementary until 10 years. For the county, it would push out the fire station, Sandy Hook Fire Station. Those are the primary ones. It would allow us to build Cushman Elementary, and as well as the high school improvements, and the courthouse, and West Creek Fire Station. So, and then other things would have to be pushed out.
So the high school, the elementary school, and the high school improvements are in what the county's presentation was earlier.
Yes.
I have a question. Somebody probably answered, maybe even Dr. Bailey. We know that every year there's legislation regarding grants for infrastructure, schools, and if there were grants, often that's tied to LCI as well, would that affect our ability to strike out a little earlier on some of these projects that we're looking at right now may need to be pushed out?
Yeah,
and
I'm going to try to
project
the best I can. That's not
going to
work
at all. Yeah, Ms. Horn, you're exactly right. I mean, what we share in our community today is what's happening across this Commonwealth. I mean, there's aging infrastructure in every jurisdiction, north, south, east, and west. And I've read a little bit about making the literary loan a little more solvent and providing opportunities for schools to access some funds for modernization effort. Needs to happen across the Commonwealth, so we continually monitor the legislation and see how that could impact us, and if any grants come available, we can bet that we're going to be on top of that. Mr. Young and I are working together on a grant right now for a generator for Randolph Elementary School. So that's listed right now as a placeholder in FY22 for Randolph, and if those grant funds are received, then that's less local dollars that we need to be able to pass that. So anything we could do to find dollars to offset the county cost can certainly be beneficial.
Thank you.
It goes to get broadband in there. That's just my personal opinion, just so you know.
Thank you.
And Dr. Braley, the model you all used, do we have project mention in here yet, or can you talk to that and talk to the impact?
That's a great question, Mr. Lumpkins. The pricing models that we've used do not include a third-party administrator working on behalf of us in the county to represent our interest in new construction. And so we go forward with these projects, that would be an additional cost that we have to build in balancing the budget.
Thank you. And Mr. Young, same question, I guess, on our capital projects.
That is the same situation on the county side as well. We're anticipating anywhere from $150,000 to $200,000 per year for a good project manager to manage the construction of those projects. We would have to then, we need to add those dollars into the budgets to see what the service. Those are the additional costs that we need to program.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, congratulate the schools on all the great work you've done, all the awards you've received, and our kids are just really excited to be educated the way they are and getting back to the business as usual. And so thank you for all you do on that. From the board standpoint, as Oscar mentioned, this is important and that's important. We would love to be able to fully fund all the needs of all the birds in the nest cheating for a worm. We would love to just to be able to accommodate all the needs. I think what you heard initially was from Mr. Young about 150 so of total county needs. And you heard from Ms. Monacher about 100 million or so of availability. So for some families around the kitchen table, there's more month left at the end of the paycheck. We may have more CIP left at the end of the available funds. And so one of the things that would be helpful for us as a supervisor in this forum, since we have everybody gathered here, would be for us to hear a little bit about some of the trade-offs that you may end up, and we may end up having to make. But from your side, particularly as it pertains to the 10-year CIP for the school board as presented. So we have some sense of the sensitivities, the priorities, just some information to help us go on in case there is more CIP than the other money. So that would be helpful for me.
Speaking on behalf of the board, we have prioritized the projects in this request based on year. So to answer your question, Mr. Peterson, the projects in FY22 would be the highest priority for the school division. And specifically, the highest priority even within FY22 are those combinations of the GPS and the construction projects related to traffic and the Woodall Lane, those improvements. I think that has risen to the level of the highest priority for the school division. And secondary to that is the high school improvements. And I certainly understand that some of these other minor projects may be delayed in order to balance the overall need, but the new GES has risen to the top of the priority.
Yes, and I'll say the way that Dr. Braley presents the budget to us is in tiers. So tier one needs, tier two needs, tier two, three, tier three needs. So what he was saying, basically GES is a tier one. Exclamation mark.
Maybe this is a question for Barbara or Mr. Young. Do you have an idea of what we've been cash funding, say, over the last several years? I know it's important to figure out a time period for meaning anything to us, but I know we've been cash funding capital projects for a while. We're in a good position to do so. I assume that when we're talking about taking this debt on going forward, meeting all of our policies, that the cash funding may not be as available going forward. So what we have to think about, in favor was Dr. Raley talking about smaller projects. I mean, we covered those smaller projects that we may not be able to, so can you give us a sense of the impact on some of these smaller projects?
Well, in the past, we've been able to cash fund a lot of projects, and over the past 5 years, we've spent approximately $25 million on our CIP and in cash. And so that's an average of about $5 million a year. So that is programmed into our projections, is that we would continue to utilize cash to fund a lot of smaller projects. Some of the school maintenance projects for some of our smaller fire engines, those kind of projects, and not use debt funding for those. That is contingent on us continuing to have the surpluses we've had, which we've been very fortunate here to have operating surpluses that average about $6 or $7 million over the past 5 years. For anything to change in terms of economic conditions, you wouldn't necessarily always have that. And so what we will probably do for the proposed budget is put some of those in the category of contingent on tax savings, on savings, operating savings, so that, yes, some of the projects will be guaranteed to be cash funded, maybe like up to $3 million a year, but if it's beyond that, we'll make that contingent on surpluses. But we have been very fortunate in the past to spend about $5 million a year on capital projects.
Just to go off a little bit of what Barbara was talking about a little bit in terms of our operating expenses as well, we have to be thinking about how much surplus is left. When you look at our West Creek Fire Station, on the operating side, we ended up having to put about 50 firefighters on when we opened that station. So that incurs a large operational cost, and then obviously we don't have as much surplus left to then move those projects forward. So all of those things have to be taken into consideration.
Ms. Wolak, if you don't mind, you are estimating somewhere in the range of $100 million borrowing of CIP expenses in the next 10 years. What is that predicated on? What are your assumptions that lead you to that?
It was assumptions that there would be 20-year debt and that we could get an interest rate of 2%, which right now is, we could. Who knows what the interest rate environment will be in the next several years, but it was also issuing that debt in two pieces, $70 million initially and about $30 million, $26 million, I think, in the 5 years after that. So so that our debt service could build up gradually to the point that it would need to be.
Right, it was spreading it out. And the high school, is that paid off or is it going to be paid off in the next fiscal year?
We have a little bit of old debt, not much on the school side. We have about six more payments at $500,000 each. And then on the county side, we still have about $5 or $6 million in debt for the emergency operations system. So there, I believe there's six more years on the school debt and about eight more years on the county debt. But it's gradually dropping.
Right, so we'll be paying the school debt for another 6 years, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and $500,000 each year for debt services.
And then the EOC is also, you said,
yeah, and that one is dropping, though. That will eventually drop to $500,000 as well. About 1.7, and then this drops to about $1 million, and then it drops to about $500,000. So they're decreasing the amount.
As we go along.
Yeah.
Right, okay. All right, thank you very much.
Dr. Raley, If my math is right, it looks like about 62% of our students attend middle and high school, which you could argue are probably the most critical needs for broadband. Depending on which, basically, and I echo this last bullet's sentiments about the priority of broadband, can you give us some context? If from the outside looking in, you know, you see that number of children that are being sent to school, there has to be a percentage of those that that's just the only option they have. Do we know how the broadband is impacting this disparity that we're seeing among our students?
That's a great question, Mr. Spinhauer, and I know that we have passed out approximately 600 of those mobile Wi-Fi hotspots devices. We call them devices. And, you know, I know we're talking about capital here, but ultimately that may turn into an operational expense for the school division in the future, because right now we have 600 devices that are out there. Families have come to depend on them and have come to use them for school purposes and just life. And so we've had the discussion as a board about, well, do we continue to pick those up for the next several years, or do we go back to a pre-COVID level and only administer those to individuals who are truly in financial need? We have a plan to pick those up with some one-time grant funds for next year, but that's a true conversation. We've been able to, you know, we started off school in a 100% distance environment. We were able to make that happen with these devices. We did have about 300 students that even with Khajiit devices could not access the internet, and they are what we call our Learning Lab students. And we continue to have Learning Lab students come to schools on every day of the week, honestly, at both the middle school and the high school, and those Learning Lab students even stay in their elementary schools too. So even with what we've done to get those mobile hotspots, there's still a pocket of our population that does not have access.
If we're going to do it, we're going we're going to have to look at some things on both the county and the school side to say, what can we slide back until we can get this done? So.
I guess, Mr. Chairman, I guess one of the aspects of broadband, I know we've had meetings in the past, and we have strategies. Have we sat down or have gotten together a group of folks now to look at that strategy going forward and having some goals and then bring on some of those people that can assist us with our delegates here in Virginia and as congressperson to help us reach out to those people and see what we can do to help them help us
We have through our congressional delegation and our state delegation for assistance. I think I can speak for the board. We haven't really had great success going through that avenue. We also laid out a broadband plan for broadband that was very specific. We do have is communicating with some of the broadband providers because there are restrictions in terms of when they can talk to us because of being involved in some of the grant process at the federal level. So it is a difficult process because they are the providers. It's not something that is traditionally a government service that's provided. It's a very competitive industry, as you all know. But there are, that doesn't mean to say that some local governments across the country haven't taken that into account. There have been a number of local governments that are kind of smaller area that they service in terms of where their population is spread out. They're more concentrated, so they're able to finance a project fairly easily. We have a little bit different situation here in Goochland, where our amount of land area that we're talking about is very large, and we have it not just in the U.S., we also have some of these problems in the eastern and central portion of Goochland and Rogier area as well. So it is definitely something that we have to think more strategically about, and we definitely put something together to look at that. But the board has pretty much made it very clear to me that we're going to pursue every avenue that we can to bring broadband to the areas that we don't have in the future.
If there are no other questions, I guess we're doing this for time on time. Do you want to okay, move into the citizen comment period?
I just have one more question, comment, thought. We are all still receiving COVID funds, and traditionally that's something that's a one-time item. We also have some legislation out there to support what the governor has done to hold our ADM, which provides our basic aid, and if that is continued, then that will allow those additional funds to come in and help support needs. Is there any thought on how that revenue could be used to help support something else than funds, or would that just naturally occur as those funds come in? We would go back and look at our CIP and go, well, we used COVID funds for this item over here, so now we have this revenue available to apply to our CIP. That's something to think about.
Yes, it's actually something we look at every day, actually, with the current COVID funds now. We actually utilize those where we can. I think one of the things about some of those COVID funds that we have to think about is those are ongoing expenses, even after we're out of this situation, particularly a lot of the operating facilities type expenses will just be operating in a different environment moving forward. So it's not that the
actual expenses will go away, those expenses will continue to move forward, but not have the COVID dollars necessarily be counting on those for funding the federal government. So I think we need to look at that, but we have to be very careful about how much dependency we have on those funds being available.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, and Mr. President, let me know if there's somebody to check on the Zoom.
Hi, Andy. And I'm going to turn another call from that on the bridge way. And we
it's
in the street that you are
I need the mic closer.
Bam. Hold it closer.
Look, I want you to please consider being fiscally responsible. Regardless of whether you are an employee of the government or an elected official of the government, you have a duty to the people you represent and the people you work for to be fiscally responsible. And that means that you are very careful in how you spend people's money. These plans are wonderful, but I don't know that we can afford a Taj Mahal in Dushan County. Not with the way that they perform the people are out of work. They're private. If you know that taxes are going up all across the board. If they go up in Dushan County, you're short in years five. Well, if I was in the director's office, one of the things that I had to do with my own members in the Board of Supervisors was to help pull groups from the brink of bankruptcy. You cannot, it's what happens if you borrow $100 million in that position where you would be doing, but the cost of the loan, and they go to $150 or $200 million, where are you going to get the money to pay them? It's not there. I used to think when I was kind of treasurer, I'd leave for a supervisor meeting after somebody would be almost every month asking for the money. What do they think they do? Go out to a magic money tree in the backyard of an administration building and pull the money off the tree? That's not the way it works. It comes out of the wallets of the people that you represent. And it's critically important to be aware of that. I often hear a school contract is for the children, and indeed it is. But during the time that I was county treasurer, I did over 4,500 payment plans for people in this county from all parts of the county, from every district. There were more in certain parts of District 22, and I had plenty of people living in Districts 3, 4, and 5 who were struggling to pay their taxes even then. How will it help the children? If their parents' taxes go up and they can no longer afford the house, and their houses will close or sold for taxes, you are not helping any child when that happens. We've also seen over the years other projects with cost-saving loans. In 2013, we changed how we collected personal property taxes just twice a year, and that resulted in an accounting windfall of $2.6 million. That was supposed to pay in entirety for the new fire station out of 26 in Hansford. Due to cost overruns because of the Department of Environmental Quality and others, it was doubled. Just in the county next door, we have that Savannah County Hospital that the citizens over there are struggling to pay for because of the cost overrun of the $80 million. Saving $40 million for the hospital and then having cooks come in and overcharge you. That's what I mean. What happens if that happens? So I'm going to encourage everyone to hope for the best and plan for the absolute worst. That is the most physically responsible thing that you can do. And I'm begging you to say that your town and the people who live here to do that. Thank you for your time today.
Public comment open here, but I want to hopefully folks online can hear me. And if you're observing online,
Make sure you raise your hand, and when we get done with public comment here in the room, I think our IT team can connect you in, and so we can field your comments if you're watching online. So that'll be just a couple minutes.
Hi, yes, Sandra Ward, 1733 Foxdowns Lake, Oilville. Mr. Chairman, last week I had fairly detailed discussions with members of staff and a member of the Chickahominy Health District, and at that time I was told that sometime later last week, or hopefully by this week, the county would have a dedicated hotline, both phone line and online, access to provide some detailed information about how vaccines will be distributed. It's Tuesday, I haven't seen it yet. Last week there was a sign-up website on the Chickahominy Health District that was spread via Facebook. I was told it was on the county website. I could not find it, and I probably spent more time rummaging on the county website than most people. I know you are at the bottom of the food chain as far as this goes, and you're trying very, very hard to meet the citizens' expectations. But there is a real vacuum of information out there people would like to know. If you can see your way clear to make this happen sooner than later, everybody would appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.